Anandasya Jananjana Shilakaya Chaksurun Malitam Yinatasmai Sri Gurudeva Maha Mukam Kuroti Vachalam Pangumlam Jayatir Girim Yakrivat Maham Bande Sri Gurum Dimitarina Vanshakapatu Vyusta Kripa Sindhu Behavacha Patitanam Pavani Vyo Vaishnavi Vyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Tonight I would like to reflect on both the presentation given by these young students about our acharyas and the importance of our own relationship with our acharyas, both living and past. It's a great comfort to me. I was just telling the kids out there, these students, that I can die happy now. I know there'll be someone to carry on successfully the glorification of our Vaishnavacharyas. So they're very enthused and enlivened in doing this. The teachings that we accept in our Gaudiya Sampradaya, they're presented and exemplified by our acharyas, by our teachers that have come before us. Even in modern times, we understand where one has come from is oftentimes more important than who one is or what one is doing. It impacts it greatly. There's a large movement nowadays towards getting in touch with one's past. There's all kinds of different programs showcased on a variety of different media platforms, shows that research individuals' lineage, going back through the history, you know, generations and generations, and oftentimes surprising people with the information they find out about their past or their family history. There's shows that work on connecting us with lost relatives. There's this program I've seen advertised about getting samples of your DNA and finding out your different chromosomes and what makes you who you are and all of these different types of things. So there is a lot of effort to see what our past is, because we understand that our past impacts our present. Understanding who we were, where we've come from, what we have impacts who we are now. And this is extremely so and important in our own Vaishnava activities as we follow in the footsteps of so many previous acharyas. Days like today are extremely important because we have just a basketful, if you will, of personalities that we can study about, speak about, hear about, and understand from how they exemplified in their lives the principles that we strive to exemplify, strive to achieve. It's often a great difficulty for many of us to come to the standard of devotional service that we read about in our Chaitanya Lila literatures. But when we see the lives of these individuals, look at the difficulties that they've overcome, because make no doubt about it, it's not that because these were great acharyas, they had no difficulties in their lives. I mean, goodness me, we look at the Pandavas, the immediate associates of Lord Krishna, and how many difficulties they had to overcome. So, I mean, Sanatana Goswami was placed into jail for some time. The list goes on and on of the difficulties that our acharyas have undertaken. Nonetheless, by understanding how they have undertaken these challenges, how they have come through them, and how they have used them to strengthen their own devotional service can be essential and helpful for us understanding better our own efforts in devotional service. The followers of Lord Chaitanya and ourselves serving under the instruction and the guidance of Srila Prabhupada, we should have a keen interest on this subject. It shouldn't be something that, oh yeah, somebody's going to talk about that. I think I've heard it before. Anyway, it doesn't really affect me. We should be very eager to understand who are these personalities. Fortunately for us, through the service of individuals like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Vrindavan Das Thakur, Murari Gupta, We have so many wonderful descriptions of the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya's activities, but more importantly, the activities of Lord Chaitanya with his devotees and the descriptions of the lives of these devotees. This is an opportunity for us, and Srila Prabhupada has done such a glorious thing giving it to us in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's so much information in the purports of Chaitanya Charitamrita about these acharyas from our past. So, and this way we really do have a great opportunity before us and a great facility to look at our lineage, if you will, to become familiar with it. And by becoming familiar with our lineage, by understanding better these acharyas, we can both understand the philosophical teachings that we are trying to live and the sociological implications that those teachings have on the greater lifestyle that we're striving to exemplify each day. Because although, unlike our acharyas, we may have to live what we almost feel like is dual parallel lives, you know, one foot in the material world, executing our responsibility of family and home and business and like this, and paying the bills and the mortgage and so on, and one foot in the world of devotional service where we feel we have no connection with that, we do have to figure out how to navigate those two worlds together. And many of our acharyas can give us this example. To understand how they help us in that way, I wanted to examine two different verses today. One verse is a very well-known verse from the Bhagavad Gita, from the fourth chapter, 34th verse, Tadvidhi Pranipratena, Paripatena Shevaya, Upadekshantite. You all know this verse, Teganyam, Gyaninas Tatpadarshina. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you, because he has seen the truth. Now, Srila Prabhupada makes a very wonderful statement here. He gives a nice explanation in this particular. It says, the path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord, therefore, advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession from the Lord himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following this principle of disciplic succession. The Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the disciplic succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process, as is the fashion of the foolish pretenders. The Bhagavatam, 6th canto, 3rd chapter, verse 19, says, Dharmantu sakshat bhagavat pratinam. The path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help lead one to the right path. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master. And when he sees a genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. Not only should one hear submissively from the spiritual master, but one must also get a clear understanding from him in submission and service and inquiries. A bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind toward the disciple. Therefore, when the student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiry becomes perfect. How many of you have read this verse previously to this evening? I would expect every hand in the room to go up, unless you're a first-time guest. This is one of the most famous verses in the Bhagavad Gita and a very important verse. I would like to compare that verse with another verse that I've selected. This verse is from Rupa Goswami's Nectar of Instruction, verse number 4. Datati pratigrinati guyam akyati prichite bhunkte pojayate chaiva sadvidham priti lakshan. Offering gifts in charity, accepting charitable gifts, revealing one's mind in confidence, inquiring confidentially, accepting prasad, offering prasad. These are the six symptoms of love shared by one devotee and another. Now, in this particular purport, Srila Prabhupada speaks in much greater detail than he does in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita on verse 34. But I'd like to read this particular selection from there. In this verse, Rupa Goswami explains how to perform devotional activities in the association of other devotees. This is the type of instruction we're looking for. There are six kinds of activities: giving charity to the devotees, accepting from the devotees whatever they may offer in return, opening one's mind to the devotees, inquiring from them about the confidential service of the Lord, honoring prasad, our spiritual food given by the devotees, and feeding the devotees with prasad. An experienced devotee explains, and an inexperienced devotee learns from him. This is called guyam akati prichiti. When a devotee distributes prasad, remnants of the food offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in order to maintain our spirit of devotional service, we must accept this prasad as the Lord's grace received through the pure devotee. We should also invite pure devotees into our home, offer them prasad, and be prepared to please them in all respects. This is called bhunkte bhojayate chava. Even in ordinary social activities, these six types of dealings between two loving friends are absolutely necessary. Now, this next point I'm going to read from this purport is extremely important. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness has been established to facilitate these six kinds of loving exchanges between devotees. When we hear Srila Prabhupada make a comment like this, this should kind of set our ears up. He's explaining to us, here's why I established ISKCON. Okay, why? To facilitate the six types of loving exchanges between devotees. So, from this first verse, the one from the Bhagavad Gita, we see an interesting point that's noted in the purport of that verse. In order to be the person that verse is indicating that we should be, we have to have been the person that verse is speaking the instruction to. When you think about it, in order to be able to give that knowledge of spiritual life, we have to have been receiving that knowledge of spiritual life from our own spiritual master. In other words, we have to go through the process to teach the process. Makes sense. It's a pretty common sense point. This is called the parampara. This is what our entire principle of teaching is based upon. And quite frankly, it's the essential point of our devotional service. Now, in the context of spiritual life, sometimes people think this is a very alarming idea. You know, I have to have this whole learning process and pass down and do what somebody says. And, you know, in any other standard of education, any other field of teaching, this is the understood way of receiving knowledge. There's a doctor at Shands that's done all the surgeries for my wife's multiple joint replacements, as well as for many, many, many other people in Gainesville. And he's extremely highly respected. And the example of his work, the quality of his work, the ability of his work is held up as the standard. Now, he's retired. and he teaches younger students how to do this type of surgery. His facility and position to teach is based on the knowledge of how to do this and the years of experience he's had at doing it. And the way that he learned to do this, the way that he developed this, and the ability to give these instructions and guidance is there because he learned it from others. So it's the same thing in spiritual life. Why should we think that, you know, spiritual life is just a do as you like, you know, take a little bit of this, take a little bit of that, what you probably call a kitschery religion, you know. Prabhupada used this word hodgepodge. I don't think I ever heard that word hodgepodge until Prabhupada used it. We all use it now. But, you know, that this is not the process for developing spiritual life. There is a standard. There is a protocol. There's a tradition. Now, this word tradition is very interesting. We pride ourselves as coming in the Vaishnava tradition. So, according to Mr. Webster, a good friend that we rely on for many of our topics of discussion, he defines tradition as this: the handing down of statements, beliefs, or legends, customs, and information from one generation to another generation, especially by word of mouth or by practice. Is that not what we're doing in devotional service, exactly to the T? He continues. A long-established or inherited way of thinking, acting, and practicing one's life. Theologically speaking, he goes on, a body of laws, teachings, and/or doctrines understood to have been received from previous saints and handed down orally or in a written form from generation to generation. I mean, right there, Webster's Dictionary has completely described the Vaishnava lifestyle that we're following, the purpose of honoring our previous acharyas. This clearly indicates, even from a mundane point of view with no consideration of any type of spiritual knowledge, it clearly indicates a relationship between a teacher and a student, with knowledge being based on the fact that this is passed down. How does something get passed down? It has to be passed down to someone that's willing to hear. And what are the dynamics that need to be there so that this relationship between a teacher and a student will be a success? Well, if we go back to Bhagavad Gita, the fourth chapter, the three words are very important in that verse: submissive, inquiry, and service. Now, when I was in ninth grade, I had Mr. Galt. And Mr. Galt tried his best to teach me physics and science. He was good. He was well-respected. But because I was neither interested in inquiring about the subject, because I had no mood of submissive interest in his instructions, what to speak of had any inkling of giving any service to the instructor, I learned very little of physics and science, as you can see today. At that time, my youth was, as the Bhagavad Gita says, bahushaka. Many, many branches. I had so many other things other than physics and science that I was interested in. And we see the result today. You won't get any information out of me about physics and science. Absolutely nothing. I know that if you turn the flame on underneath water, it'll boil and I can put it in my tea. That's it. That's the extent of my physics. And that if I open the door real hard, it'll hit me in the head because every force got an equal and nothing like that. But, you know, Mr. Galt tried. But because there was no submissive inquiry and no service, there was no fructification of knowledge. Fortunately for me, if we fast forward a few years, find myself at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada, being told about Bhagavad Gita, as well as so many other subjects in the spiritual science. By that point in my life, I had figured out what my interest was, what my submissive inquiry would be, how to render service. And as a result, of these three, some little bit of advancement has taken place over the years by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. So this is the mood the student has to have if he expects to get anywhere. We can't just, you know, take a body, stick it in a classroom or in a, you know, educational scenario and expect that something will happen just by the presence of that physical entity. There has to be something deeper than that. Now, there's also an additional quality the teacher needs to have. The teacher has to have the ability to give the truth because they will have seen the truth. Mr. Gault had, actually, I think he had, I'm not real sure if I can remember clearly, 2 or 3 degrees. And, you know, this means he spent a lot of years in college learning about these subjects. And he'd been teaching at that school for as long as anybody I knew could remember. So he was extremely qualified in the field. And he had learned that subject by hearing it from others that knew it before him. And this made him a qualified person to speak it. It may have had no impact on my lack of qualification to hear it, but it didn't diminish his position. So now we get an understanding of what's necessary for these two persons and how the process works. Submissive inquiry from someone that can give the knowledge because he's received the knowledge by the same process that is being expected of the student. So what does this have to do with the other verse I said I was going to speak about? Well, here's my point. Let's revisit the translation of the Nectar of Instruction verse here. Offering gifts in charity, accepting charitable gifts, revealing one's mind in confidence, inquiring confidentially, accepting prasad and offering prasad are the 6 symptoms of love shared by one devotee and another. Now this verse is indicative of another item that needs to be shared between the student and the teacher. That is love for each other. That has to be there. Now, there are many types of love in this world. We all know that. Most of them simply masquerade as lust. However, there is a type of love referred to in Christian theology called agape. And this is a love that, here again, going back to our friend Mr. Webster, this is a love that's defined as unselfish love. A love of one person for another without sexual implications. A love that is corresponding to the love that God has for humanity. In other words, a love based on a mood of service. So, how does such a love function? How does it manifest? Well, according to Rupa Goswami, it manifests through these 6 different symptoms. Giving of gifts, accepting of gifts, revealing the mind, inquiring confidentially, accepting prasad, and giving prasad. I'd like to take a moment and maybe on these 6 points hear from some of you examples of this. For instance, and whoever's got the mic, I apologize, you're probably going to be running all over the room, but that's your job with the mic. So someone please, an example of the guru giving a gift. Well, this is going to go nowhere fast. Yes, Aditi.
Srila Prabhupada not only gave us the gift of knowledge of decoding Sanskrit texts, but he also gave himself. He showed us practically how to apply that knowledge, how day by day by day, how one lives the life of a sadhu.
Thank you. An example, please, of how a disciple gives a gift. This always works better when Seisha does it. Everybody's willing to... Yes, Prabhu.
A disciple offers submissive service to the guru.
Okay, as we're talking about here. Okay, we'll go with that. An example of the guru accepting gifts. Mr. Sukhadev?
And the guru may accept dakshin, or Prabhupada, the devotees used to give him sweaters and watches and so many things.
Mm-hmm. An example of the disciple accepting gifts. Not the same as what Adidev said. Yes, Mother Jay Gordon?
What about Diksha?
Thank you. Now, this one may seem to be difficult, but if you think about Prabhupada's pastimes, it's not an example of the guru revealing his mind. It's actually quite simple. Mother Ruchira?
Through Srila Prabhupada's books.
Yes, very nice example, through Srila Prabhupada's books. And an example of the disciple revealing their mind. Yeah, all right. Back in the back there, okay.
Yes, Haribo. We make offerings to the guru on his Vyasa Puja.
Opening our heart, explaining our feelings, okay, all right. All right. An example of, it's quite easy, the guru accepting prasad. Every day we make an offering. Every attempt there. And then an example of the disciple accepting prasad. I guess that one needs no explanation. So these are the six items, and these are the ways that actually the teacher and the student, the guru and the disciple, exchange these items with each other. Because what it does is it develops a bond of love between the two. And there must be love between the disciple and the guru. There must be. In order for the relationship to move forward, there must be this type of loving exchange. These are all points that we've discussed here that are present in our devotional service every day. Now, most of the times, we think of these type of exchanges as being, you know, as the Nectar of Ocean says in the verse, between friends, between buddies, between besties. But who is a better friend than the spiritual master? Who has our greatest interest at mind and at heart more than the spiritual master? Who is more concerned about our well-being than the spiritual master? So there is a deep friendship that develops. It may not be a friendship of, you know, rubbing elbows and hey, hard ball, you know, but it is nonetheless a type of friendship that is essential for our advancement in devotional service. If you hear from the early disciples of Srila Prabhupada, some of them were even able to be very intimate with Prabhupada. He would reveal to different devotees what he wanted done, how he expected things to be done, anxieties he might have been feeling as the process devotional, as ISKCON expanded, shared with them the joys and accomplishments. This was a relationship that those very early disciples had the good fortune of because of their close proximity in that relationship to Srila Prabhupada. Of course, as Prabhupada got into thousands of disciples, that may not have been possible for everyone. But still, in a more pure spiritual sense, it is possible. And that mood still continues to this day with the spiritual masters that have taken the responsibility from Srila Prabhupada to continue to initiate new followers, new members into the Gaudiya Sampradaya, into the family of ISKCON. That same mood of selfless devotion and complete service is shared. You can see it in so many circumstances. So, how do we know that this is a real type of a loving exchange and not just some type of modern-day sentiment? Well, we can look for examples in our lineage, in our heritage. We can look to our own acharyas to see what were their dealings like with each other, with their seniors, with their juniors, with their equals, and see if those relationships were of the same nature of these six loving exchanges. If you do even just a scratch the surface bit of research into the Leela of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates, you'll see this is overflooded. Particularly when I think of this, I think of the relationship of Ramchandra Kaviraj. Ramchandra Kaviraj was a disciple of Srinivasacharya. Now, Srinivasacharya was one of the closest friends, practically like godbrothers, of Narottam Das Thakur. They were on the same level as far as their spiritual masters being equal in that sense. And Ramchandra Kaviraj, being Srinivasa's disciple, was technically a junior to Narottam. When the time came that Srinivas Acharya wanted Narottam Das Thakur to take Ramchandra Kaviraj as his associate so that Ramchandra would benefit, here again, the disciple, the spiritual master was looking for the greatest welfare for his disciple. The greatest welfare will be for you to associate with Narottam Das Thakur. By associating with Narottam Das Thakur, you will gain a genuine, real understanding of devotional service. So you put them in touch with each other. And their friendship developed in such a way that they were practically equals. They were equals. They traveled together. They shared equally everything they had spiritually. They preached together. They accepted disciples side by side. Generally speaking, a junior and a senior would not both accept disciples. But there were no barriers in this relationship because their love and appreciation in that mood of service together to Mahaprabhu was so deep. So from the spiritual point of view, they didn't think of any junior or senior relationship. Their love for each other, the love they had for the service they jointly rendered to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the love they had for their disciples, was beyond that concept of higher and lower. This was a very wonderful example. And why was it like that? Because they did these six things. They gave gifts to each other. They accepted gifts from each other. Narottam and Ramchandra revealed their minds to each other in their intimate conversations. And they inquired from each other how to move forward in devotional service. And of course, they gave each other prasad and accepted prasad like this. So these six activities given to us by Rupa Goswami. And why did Rupa Goswami give these six to us? And why did he pick these six? Because these develop and strengthen the bond of love in devotional service. It becomes unbreakable. This is what everyone talks about, the unbreakable love. And this is the way we develop it in the process of our devotional service. So much so was this love for each other that when Ramchandra Kaviraj returned to Vrindavan at the request of Srinivasacharya and never made it back to Bengal, Narottam Das Thakur's last song was a mood of heartbreaking separation from Ramchandra Kaviraj. Another example, Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami. If we just look at the exchanges between these two, when they were living together in Vrindavan, how one was always given to the other and no, the other was given. And it wasn't like an opportunity to try and outdo each other. They both wanted to facilitate each other's service. Working together, they would write the books and speak about the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya. Even when one wanted to offer prasadam and wasn't able to, their love was so great that Srimati Radhika herself would step in and facilitate that desire. Oh, you want to give some prasad too? And you don't have any here. Take all this milk, take all this bread, like that. So this is how intense their desire to share these six things was. So these are just a couple of examples. Like I said, the Chaitanya Lila literatures are vastly filled with all these different opportunities for this. So this is the reason that we celebrate the passing, the notation of the appearance of our great acharyas. This is the reason that every year we see in the Vaishnava calendar that these activities, these days are noted for us to make a point to interrupt our ordinary activities of life to honor these personalities because, A, it's an example of ourselves engaging in these activities with them, even though they may not be physically present before us. But more importantly, it's an example for ourselves in how we can move forward and advance in our own devotional service. This is the importance of remembering our Vaishnavacharyas. This is the importance of presentations like what these young children did, taking key points in their relationships and reminding us of them. If you see someone who's going to sit down and give a class on this one or that one, you'll never hear somebody say, oh, I've heard that before, I'm not going there. No, everyone wants to hear these activities over and over and over and over again because the more we hear them, the softer our heart becomes. I was just reading when Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, and Mother Jasoda was having a conversation with Madhu Mangal while Krishna was holding the hill. Mother Jasoda was actually upset with Krishna. You've lifted this hill. Your body is just like soft butter. You're causing yourself so much difficulty. It's being put under so much. So our heart will become like that same soft butter if we take these opportunities to remember our acharyas, to glorify our acharyas, to discuss our acharyas, and learn from the appearance and disappearance of these great devotees, because they have come, not because they had to, they have come to set an example for us, to teach us how to render submissive service, how to inquire properly, how to learn sufficiently so that we can then turn and give that same service to those who come after us, and how to have loving exchanges in the execution of our own devotional service. So this is our responsibility. This is our duty. And it's our honor to remember, to speak about and worship these great personalities. So therefore, to hear these young devotees, you know, make this effort to share the pastimes, you know, even though they're feeling, I was talking with them on the veranda, they're feeling a little self-conscious or embarrassed or, you know, but they do it because they know it will give pleasure to the Vaishnavas. So this is the importance of understanding our lineage. This is the importance of these two verses from Bhagavad Gita and from Nectar of Instruction on how we can move forward and advance in our own devotional service. So I'll finish there. If anyone has any comments or questions, I'll do my best to answer them or whatever. Otherwise, if no one has anything, we'll... Yes? Microphone over here, please.
You use the word, like, submissive quite often.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that word a lot geared especially towards women in our movement, and also in the outside world doesn't necessarily have a positive connotation. So I was wondering in this context if you can explain a little more about what it means to have that mood of submissiveness.
Submissive doesn't mean to be a doormat. Submissive means that we understand that it's not all about me. When we understand that it's not all about me, it allows us to open ourselves to receiving guidance and instruction from other places. When we're thinking that it's all about me, we can't be submissive. As you mentioned, in the outside world or the secular world, this mood of submission is not very well respected, you know. The guys I work with, you know, they're a hunting, backwoods, rough and tough crew of guys, and the idea of being humble and submissive, they just don't get it. I remember, what was I saying? Oh, I was talking to one of my associates one day, and I was explaining about the false ego. And he said, ego? False ego? What ego? Where's an ego? It just, he couldn't, the very words were foreign to him. And no disrespect to him, but that's the lifestyle they live. There is no mood of submitting ourselves, because we're afraid if we submit ourselves we're going to get exploited, because that's what the whole material world is about. As I said, these loving exchanges in the material world masquerade as lust. Exploitation is what happens when you submit to someone. Manipulation is what happens when you show submission materially. Spiritually, the spiritual master has no interest in that. This is why there's a process of hearing, so that we hear from the correct person and realize that what they're saying to us is not about... One thing, if you repeatedly ask any Prabhupada's early disciples why they did so much for him, they'll all say the same thing. Because I knew Prabhupada wasn't going to cheat me. I knew he was not going to cheat me. So this is the thing. This is the difference between material and spiritual. And this is why people are not interested in being submissive. Oh, I've been exploited. I'm not going there. Thank you very much. I'll go somewhere else. Mother Ruchira?
I was going to add that actually we submit regularly.
Yes,
like
true.
If we're sick, we submit to a doctor because he knows. So it really depends on what it is we're wanting, who we're going to submit to. Mm. But we're always submitting to someone.
Thank you. I always consider Mother Ruchira to be my senior. She brought me to Krishna consciousness. So. So how appropriate that she should add that insight to it. Yes. Yes, this is true. It's not that we can't say, oh, I'm not submissive. My rough and tumble buddies, no, I'm not submissive. Excuse me, you are. You know, did you get here exactly at 5 minutes till 10 like they told you you had to? You didn't come at 10 minutes after 10. You were here at 5 minutes till 10 because, you know, if you don't, you're in trouble. You know, did you finish that work list you were given? Yes, you did because you submitted to it. Okay, granted, you get your paycheck, whatever. We get a paycheck. Look at the paycheck we're getting. Look at this association. Look at the devotional practices we get. Look at the benefit from reading Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. It may not be millions of dollars, but it's much more valuable. There's that story with Sanatana Goswami, and what was his name? I know the guy's name. Oh, I can't remember now. Anyway, he heard that Sanatana Goswami had the touchstone. Came to him and said, oh. He said, Sadhu, I hear you've got a touchstone, and give me anything I need. No, that's true. Well, I want it. Okay. I don't have to, like, steal it or buy it or beg it or connive it out of you. No, no, it's over there in the garbage pile. Take it yourself. Okay. Well, he rummaged through the garbage pile, got it, and left. And on the way out, he thought, whoa, wait a minute. I'm not a fool. If he's giving this up so easy, what's he got that's more valuable? So we went back to Sanatana Goswami. My dear Goswami, I'm a smart man. Oh, you are? Yes. If you're giving me this, you've got something better. Yes, you are very smart. So I want that. Do you? Oh, yes, I do. Okay, so go to the Jamuna. And the Jamuna at this time is not the Jamuna we know now that you can practically wade across. You know, it's the Jamuna. And he says, go to the Jamuna, take that touchstone, throw it into the Jamuna. Your choice. So the man goes, he comes back, gives him pure devotional service. Because pure devotional service is millions of times more valuable than a hand. If you go to Govardhan, to Anayor, and you reach down in that ankle-deep, beautiful, brown, golden, shimmering sand, and hold that up in your hand, you have in this hand, and if you have in this hand, diamonds, emeralds, rubies, and sapphires, you can dump this because this is much more valuable. This is a devotional perspective. So, yes. Anything else? Getting close to Bhishanam time. Yes, Radhikesh Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for such a nice class, Prabhu. I wanted to ask you, you know, given this point we're talking about submission and humility and all of these things, how do we apply this in our everyday practical work life to where we don't get trampled on and all of this type of stuff, to where we can do our work? And sometimes, obviously, in the workplace, you need to be assertive and all of these type of things and not allow other people to walk all over you. How do we balance that? Because sometimes, you know, I have difficulty with that sometimes. So just wanted to get your
input. I'll answer that with two examples. One, Narada Muni. Narada Muni had a disciple. And the disciple was a cobra. And the cobra became Narada Muni's disciple. You know, neck beads all the way up. That's where this idea Brahmacharya with the big neck beads. Yeah, can't be. And, you know, one big tilak mark. You know. So this cobra, once all the kids learned, oh, the cobra's a Vaishnava, they threw rocks at him. Ah, the cobra's not going to do anything. Let's throw rocks at him. So the cobra went back to Narada Muni and complained, my dear Narada, my life's miserable since I became a devotee. He said, yes. He said, you're a cobra. Show your hoods, but don't do anything. So the cobra went back and the kids came, oh, Vaishnava! And the kids all ran away. He was still a humble Vaishnava, but he had to use his skills. My wife wrote to Srila Prabhupada this exact question. I have the letter framed on the wall of our house. And her and, oh, let me see, what was, two other god sisters wrote, how do we go out and, you know, preach and be so strong and distribute books fearlessly, and then come back to the temple and be humble, quiet devotees. Prabhupada said, a lion in the field and a lamb at home. So we have skills, we have to use them. We just don't have to abuse them. That's the secret. Because if we keep our own humility, you know, we're going to be humble with everyone. But it doesn't mean that we're going to let ourselves be abused. Back to the point that Shambhu's making, you know. Submission doesn't mean to become a doormat. It means to understand how to serve. Anyone else? We'll finish there. It's 6 o'clock. People are lined up for prasadam, and that's one of the 6 exchanges. Let's take prasadam. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.